हरे ओ सहना वधु सहना भुनक्षु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविर्विश्वावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So now the discussion between Vaishnav Das and Devi Das. Vaishnav Das, have you concluded your education, my son? Devi Das, I have studied up to Muktipada and Siddhanta Kushamanjali in Nyaya Shastra. In Smriti Shastra, I've read all the books. So that means also the standard books. Otherwise, how could you just say, I read all the books?
Mm. You know? Is it significant that he said, I read all the books, I mean, compared to study?
Yeah, because studied means he's specifically focused on that, and read means he's gone through them all, right? Like that. Because smriti means all the Vedic literatures. In other words, he's read all the Vedic literatures, but he specifically studied the Nyaya Shastra. Vaishnava Das. I see you have worked hard on your studies of the scriptures. What have you learnt? What is the outcome of your efforts? So what has been gained and what is, you know, means what in the way of it's understood, but also then what is in applying what has been gained from that. One must constantly strive for mukti. I am searching for mukti through the faithful execution of my prescribed religious duties. Good. So that means you're performing your prescribed duties, and you can either get, you know, the immediate, means one is the immediate emotional exchange and everything that one gets from proper performance interaction. One, you get the longer term of the karma, right? Then more than that is then one is looking at moksha, right? One is looking at liberation by the performance of your duties, right? Being freed from the material entanglement. But as Vaishnava Das will point out, is then beyond that, you do the same prescribed duties, but you're doing it because of devotion to the Lord. Right? Vaishnava Das, yes, I was like you once. I have also studied those books and sought the release of mukti. Right? Because he was very expert in... Means Devi Das is a grihastha, so if he knows the Nyaya and all that, that's just his occupation, right? That he's teaching or it's his interest, like that. So he's either teaching it or he's interested in it. But Vaishnava Das is a sannyasi, then it was his duty to know that and be able to discuss the philosophy very, you know, well. Devi Das, am I to presume that you have given up that endeavor? Vaishnava Das, son, tell me, what is your concept of mukti? Right? So he says, okay, you're endeavoring for mukti. And he says, yes, I was like you once. So now he says, so you've given up the endeavor for mukti. So now the question is, well, what is your actually definition of mukti? So in other words, I was like you once to think mukti simply meant being spiritually situated. Right? Now we understand it's to be transcendentally situated in relationship with the Lord. That's real mukti. So in other words, Vaishnavas haven't given up mukti, just that they're endeavoring for, you know, permanent mukti rather than this temporary mukti that these others are engaged in. Devi Das, the Nyaya Shastra espouses the existence of eternal difference between the jiva and Brahman. Thus, in Nyaya Shastra, it's not clear exactly how mukti, the cessation of all suffering, takes place. Right? As we were discussing, because he says there is a difference. The jiva is there eternally, the Lord is there eternally, and the material energy is there eternally. So he says it's not so clear exactly what this means, the cessation of material suffering. Because basically it means that you pull out of the material endeavor so much that you're not even conscious of anything anymore. So therefore you're basically asleep. And in this way, you avoid the suffering. Right? So that's the only problem. It's not so clear. It's not so glorious, like, you know, merging in the Brahman, and therefore, you know, it kind of lacks that element. However, the Vedanta viewpoint holds that mukti is the quest for the undifferentiated Brahman. To me, this is definitely more comprehensible, right? Because it's a higher philosophy, the Vedanta. So you have Brahman, you're trying to merge into this Brahman or this consciousness. Now, he would be coming from the Mayavad concept, where this is all illusion here. So then you're merging into the Brahman concept means you're seeing everything as means you're seeing yourself as non-different from the Brahman. But what anything you can perceive, you're thinking is not Brahman, right? But if Brahman is everything, it would have to be Brahman. So it's a faulty point. Right, so it's not he wouldn't be in the point where it's all Brahman. So now, therefore, he's just seeing the lower manifestation of the Lord as Brahman and not as the person, right, Bhagavan. So it's going to be So therefore, this makes more sense to him. The Mayavad does more than the Nyaya, because Nyaya is not clear what happens, because somehow or another, if you come to the Brahman standard, but there's still two, there's still you and the Lord, you can't understand how this is working. So it just basically means there is no relationship. While the other one, he says, no, then you merge. He's saying it's easier to understand. It is on the material platform, but it's actually on the spiritual platform. It doesn't make any sense. Right? Because the jiva is eternally the jiva, the Lord's there. How would they merge and become one? You know? Yes.
It was said before that Devidas was a smarta Brahman.
Yes, smarta. But
smarta and Mayavadi are equal?
It's not specific that they're equal, but they're basically the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say you have the corporate industrialist, and you have the, you know, unsuccessful drug dealer. Yes. They're both gross materialists. Yes. You understand? But the framework in which they function is different. Yes. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So, does that make sense? But it seems different. Because the smarta thinks that by doing the ritual, then I will get the results. And the Lord has to get the results, but what about him as a person? It doesn't matter. So it is impersonal. But the focus is on the fruit of result. Or you can do the duty and focus on, if I do the activity without a desire for results, I'll get liberation. Right? If I do the activity, means it's the proper activity. Right? It's the recommended activity. I'm doing it and I'm supposed to be doing it. But I'm doing it because I want the fruit of result, I'll get the fruit of result. I'm doing it because I'm supposed to do it with not desiring the fruit of result, I'll get liberation. Does that make sense? But the point is they think liberation means the soul merges with the Supreme, which it doesn't. It simply means the soul is freed from the material entanglement. Right? Does that make sense? Because a green bird flies into a green tree, it's not that the tree and the bird become one. The greenness, you can't tell the difference. But the point is, it is a green bird and there is a green tree. So the jiva's Brahman and the Lord's Brahman, but there's a difference between the minute Brahman of the jiva and the unlimited Brahman of the Lord. So there'll always be difference, right? But the difficulty is that they're only looking at the greenness. Right? So he's trying to comprehend is that if you become freed from material entanglement, what's the situation? So Nyaya leaves it that the jiva and the Lord are eternally different, but there's not a discussion of interaction. And the Mayavad is saying that they merge and they become non-different. But the problem is that can't happen like that, because the jiva is jiva. That's the kind of Brahman he is. right? And the Lord is that kind of Brahman that's the source of all other Brahmans. So how would they merge? You know, it's still there. You know, you take the machine and put all the parts together, you can say the nuts and bolts have merged, but you can still point out the nuts and bolts. You know. Vaishnavdas, son, I had studied thoroughly the Vedanta literature in the line of Shankara for a good 15 years before I entered the sannyas order. Right, so that means he was very well established in this. Wherein, for a further number of years, I endeavored assiduously for mukti. I accepted the four Mahavakyas of Shankara and profoundly meditated upon their purport. Nevertheless, finally I discarded that discipline and philosophy, having decided it was shallow and immature. Right? Because how is the small going to become the great? You know, it sounds interesting, but it's not going to happen. Right? Devidas, what prompted your conviction? Vaishnavdas, certainly it is not easy to describe to others the trials and tests with which one has been confronted. How will others understand? Devidas could understand from his conversation that Vaishnavdas Babaji was a profound pandit, guileless and self-realized. He had not yet studied the Vedanta, and so considered that if Vaishnavdas Babaji would kindly consent to teach him, then he could master the Vedanta as well. Therefore he said, "Sir, do you think I am an eligible candidate for studying the Vedanta?" Vaishnavdas, "Seeing that you have sufficient knowledge of Sanskrit, you could study Vedanta if you find a teacher." Devidas, "If you would kindly teach me, I am more than willing." Vaishnavdas, "My present situation is that I am simply a poor servant of the Vaishnavas. Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji has been very merciful to me, instructing me to always chant Harinam. Therefore, I try to do his bidding and have very little other time left. Besides, Srila Rupa Goswami has strictly forbidden the Vaishnavas to read or hear Shankara's exposition upon Vedanta, the Sharira Bhashya. Therefore, I do not read or teach that book." So when he said Vedanta, Devidas, he meant Shankara. He wasn't meaning Govinda Bhashya or like that. Sri Chaitanya, however, the original spiritual master of the entire creation, explained the Vedanta Sutra Bhashya to Sri Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. This is available amongst a few Vaishnavas in the form of a handwritten manuscript. You may copy this from one of them and then study it. It may help you understand your understanding. I may help your understanding if I can. In fact, you could approach Srimad Kavi Karnapur of Kanchanapali village and procure a copy from him. So that must be where he found, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was looking for either 7 or 9 years or something before he found a copy. They were handwritten, right? So then he had it published. But other than that, before it was like, you know, like we just, Chaitanya Charitamrita's are laying around everywhere. But for him, he had to look for so long to find a copy that then could be copied. So now Vaishnavdas is saying that the essence of the Vedanta has been given by Lord Chaitanya Sarvabhauma. This is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He could get a copy of that. Studying that Vaishnavdas could help him then in understanding Vedanta. Devidas, "I will pursue this matter with great care. Sir, you have vast knowledge of Vedanta. Kindly tell me very plainly if I can find the real essence of the Vedanta by studying the Vaishnav commentary." Vaishnavdas, "I have studied and taught the Shankara commentary. I have also scrutinized other commentaries, including the Sri Bhashya of Sri Ramanuja. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas study the elaborations of the aphorisms made by Sri Chaitanya and explained by Sri Gopinathacharya. In my experience, I have not yet come across anything superior and more exhaustive. No further theories, annotations, or new doctrines are necessary after the elaboration given by the Supreme Lord." Because right, Vedantists don't know the Lord, so the Lord speaks Vedanta, you're not going to get better than that. "The essence of all the Upanishads is available in these dissertations. If someone can take the pains to compile these elaborations systematically, then no other commentary will be so appreciated by the scholars of Vedanta. The words of Vaishnava Das Babaji gave Devidas profound joy, and he offered his prostrate obeisances. Proceeding from there to his father's room, he narrated everything to his father, who became jubilant, proclaiming, "Devi, you have read and heard enough. Now you must search for the real purpose of life, the ultimate goal." Right? Because otherwise you can read just more and more things, but if you're not actually finding out the goal, what's the purpose? Right? Because knowledge is supposed to give results in the way of self-realization. Right? So either it's a skill that you're using as a service to realize the Lord, or it's knowledge directly about the Lord. Right? So he's read enough of all these other things. Now he should focus on understanding the Lord from what he's read. Right? Because we see Vaishnav Das Babaji and also Lahiri Mahashai, by hearing from their spiritual master, then all the literature that they had studied, they understood the actual purport and how it was connected to the Lord. Right? Okay. Devidas, "Father, I came to Godruma feeling extremely hopeful that I could bring you back with me. If you kindly come just this one time, we would be very happy. Especially our dear mother is keen to have your darshan." Lahiri Mahashai, "I have accepted the shelter of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas and have taken a vow not to visit any non-Vaishnava house. First of all, you should become Vaishnavas. Then you can take me." Yes, one way to do it. You know, it's like Shankara, first take sannyas and we'll talk. So first become devotees, then we'll consider a visit. So. Devidas, "Father, I do not understand your instructions. We worship the Lord in our house. We have never shown disrespect to Harinam. We serve and care for guests and Vaishnavas. Are we not Vaishnavas?" Remember, because there was a discussion before, is that they're following the Vaishnav Dharma, but because its purpose is for fruitive or for moksha, they're not actually what you'd call devotees. Right? It's one kind of devotional service, but it's not actually the kind that will give one love of God. So therefore, even that's to be avoided. Right? Lahiri Mahashai, "Your activities are very similar to those of the Vaishnavas, but you are not actually Vaishnavas." Devidas, "Then please tell me what we should do to become Vaishnavas." Lahiri Mahashai, "You can become Vaishnavas by giving up your naimittic duties and adopting your eternal spiritual dharma." Right? Because they're doing the duties because that's what's going to affect the results. But it's not that it means giving up. It means that they're giving up the performance of the particular activity. It's they're giving up the mentality with which they're performing it, because then it stops being naimittic and becomes nitya. Mm-hmm. Right? It means anything engaged in the Lord's service takes on the quality of nitya, of eternal. Right? But if it's not engaged in the Lord's service, then no matter what it is, it's still naimittic, it's occasional, because it's the soul happens to be, this is the occasion for this lifetime that they're doing these particular activities according to these particular modes. The next life, they'll change. Right? Does that make sense? But in doing that, then there's certain of those naimittic activities that are not essential anymore. Right? Worship of the forefathers, other things aren't essential, because the Lord is the ultimate forefather. He is the Lord of the demigods. So then just the etiquettes of Vaishnavas, you're taking care of guests because it's Vaishnavas. Does that make sense? You're studying the scriptures because it knows the Lord, not that you're trying to pay the debt to the demigods or the sages. Right? That you're doing the yajnas because it pleases Krishna, not the demigods. Like that. Does that make sense? So only those aspects that are useful in serving the Lord, those remain, and the other ones, they're not necessary. So that's where the confusion comes up. Because they're taking that, no, this is the nitya group. This is our daily activities. So how can we give them up? But the point is they're daily because they're filling out and keeping you busy in your materialistic platform. But if you're dealing on the spiritual platform, you don't need all those to keep you busy. You only need those which are engaged in the actual directly spiritual activities. Does that make sense? We understand the theory, because basically, except for one or two here, then, how you say, being engaged in Brahminical Nitya activities were not our conditioning by the modes of nature. So this is more of a theoretical discussion. Right? Because otherwise devotees will take this and then try to apply it upon the rules given by Prabhupada that are Brahminical and say, oh, these are naimittic, we don't have to do them. No, Prabhupada's already cleared out the ones we don't need to do and left the ones that are useful in devotional service. Right? Yes.
To the degree that we engage in Nitya Dharma, to the degree that we are like on the way to become a pure devotee.
Yes.
And to the degree that we engage in Naimittic Dharma, means we are mixed.
Yes, yes. Like that. But the point is the Naimittic or Nitya depends upon whether it's in the Lord's service or not. Yes. Right? Does that make sense?
But we can do something for the Lord's service and after change our idea to do that for the same thing for us.
Yes, or the other way around. We can start out doing it for ourselves and then do it and then give the results to the Lord. Yeah. So that's the point. Mixed devotional service means you're starting from the position you're at and then trying to connect it to the Lord. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's a good position. But it's not a permanent position. One wants to come to the platform of pure devotion that whatever you're doing is only for the Lord, not for ourselves. Is that? Devidas, I have this nagging doubt, right? Because before he discussed about it, pointed out the spiritual, that there's nitya. But then now he's thinking the nitya of his Brahminical duties is automatically the nitya of spiritual duties. So now we're going to see the difference between the two kinds of nitya. So one actually is naimittic. So that's the point is Vaishnav Dharma is the nitya. And if it's not Vaishnav Dharma, that's the naimittic.
Right. Huh. But we say that Vaishnav Dharma closely resembles Brahmin's Dharma.
Yes. Yes, means the Brahminical activities. But you see, devotees, you have things to keep you busy all day in devotional service, right? So, because everything's connected to the Lord, it's actually very simple, right? But now, if you're not actually counting the Lord in it, then you have all kinds of activities to keep you busy. You know what I'm saying? You have to take simple activities and ritualize them more. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So these things come up because it's just like you're supposed to remember the Lord. That's all. So situations in which you remember the Lord, that is there for what's done. Right? But you're doing something remembering the Lord, but you have material benefit you want to get from it. Right? So now if I, stand in front of a wall and I offer prayers, then it's, the element of being focused on what I want may or may not be there, right? Yeah, well, I mean, there's only one wall, right? But then you take little boxes and you very carefully tie them on with all kinds of mantras and all that. Then you think, now I'm really ready to pray. You know what I'm saying? But you're still going to ask for the same materialistic things. You know what I'm saying? So because that materialistic aspect is there, the ritual makes it feel like now it's successful. Because the point is to be absorbed in the Lord, but because it's being ritualized due to our material, then we'll feel, I'm successful because I do this, and others aren't because they don't do this. But the point is to remember the Lord. You know what I'm saying? So in Vaishnavism, you don't have to have as much technical detail in certain rituals because it's not so important. If it's directly connected to the Lord, there may be some more ritual. That's only because to make sure that you deal with the Lord properly, right? He's a person. He likes things in a certain way. So that you do it in the way he likes, it's ritualized just to make sure. Because otherwise, we feel like it, we would do it with more devotion. We don't feel like it, we'd neglect. So this is that there's a minimal amount of proper interaction with the Lord, whether we feel like it or not. But there's other elements that, where we're looking at it materially, that doesn't need to be ritualized more. Because the point is we're not supposed to be doing that for material benefit. So it's a matter of it's more philosophical in understanding its connection to the Lord. Right? But to get the result, you have to perform the activity according to the rules. Does that make sense?
Because we can see that the more we invest, we are not satisfied with the mere ritual.
Yes.
Like if you finish your japa and it wasn't good, you are not satisfied.
Yes.
Even though you completed the rules.
Yes, yes. So that's the idea, is then slowly we see that it's the mood of devotion that's more important than the ritual through which it's expressed. But it doesn't mean that the ritual is not performed, because otherwise how do you express it? But the point is it's not because I perform the ritual nicely. That's the problem with the smartest. They think I perform the ritual nicely, they focus on the ritual and they're satisfied. But the actual point is it's not the ritual. The ritual is a medium for expressing devotion. So they think, because I did the ritual nicely, that is the devotion. That's why they're not technically Vaishnavas. Does that make sense? Yeah.
All right. In a certain sense, also in the management, something like this smarta happens. If I do the manage very nicely, everything will be...
Yes.
Bringing out the devotion of the devotee.
Yes. The point is you're engaging management in the Lord's service. Right? So that's why... the Lord will be pleased. Because otherwise, if we take the technical, like that is because I manage nicely, that's why everything is going well, then why only the management? Because you're taking a technique. Your conditioning is management, so therefore you're doing management. Right? Someone else's conditioning is book distribution. So if they said their lines nicely, everything, then it's perfect. Or the bhajari, he did everything, all the rules perfectly. Or the cook, he cooked everything perfectly. Or the pot washer, he washed it perfectly. You know what I'm saying? So if you're going to look at that, then you should see that all elements are there. Why only management is perfect and everything else doesn't matter? That's then the symptom of our conditioning. Right? But the point is it's the devotion which is offered. So therefore, you focus on that devotion, then you see that the book distributor is doing it with devotion, the cook is doing it with devotion, the pujari with devotion, the pot washer with devotion. Like that? You know, and then you want a result, it's for Krishna. That's why the technique is good. But not that the technique is good, therefore it's automatically devotion. You know what I'm saying? But that you're trying to do it for Krishna, though you may be overemphasizing, it's still devotional service, because you know the concept of pure devotion. Well, here the smartas don't. That's why it doesn't come to that platform. So it's not technically mixed devotion. It's just technically not. It looks like it, but it's not actually. You know what I'm saying? But with the devotees, mixed devotional service actually is devotional service, but it's also mixed with the material side. It's not because it has a material side that's not devotion. No, it's devotion. It's just mixed. That's why we say mixed. Otherwise, we just say it's just mundane, like the smartas. So the difference is they haven't contacted the chit potency coming in the parampara. So that's why it's different. Right? It's the form without the chit potency. Right? So they think it's just the ritual, and then they'll get the benefits. Right? But the devotees are doing the same ritual, but they're doing it to please the Lord. But there may be also that interest in the material benefits you're going to get from it. So therefore, that pure devotion is mixed, so it's not called pure devotion. Does that make sense? Just because it's mixed. Pure means it's not mixed. You know what I'm saying? If you take pure water and mix it with something else, it's not pure water anymore, but the water is pure. So the devotional aspect is correct, but the problem is there's the other thing there also. So when you mix it, it's not pure. Does that make sense? Yeah. So otherwise we'll say, oh, it's not devotion at all. No, there are the moments where it is devotion, it is proper. But then there's the other things. You know, it's like, you know, standing there on, you know, it's the festival day and all that, and... you know, so that because of the festival, so you're thinking more of the Lord, and you're praying to the Lord, oh, Lord, please engage me in your service, you know, just make your, you know, menial servant anything, you know, like that. And then someone comes and taps you on the shoulder. Hey, Prabhu, you want to help, you know, set up for the Abhishek? Hey, I'm busy praying now. You know, you understand? That's the mixed part. Right? The prayer was good. You know, he got, you know, immediately service was there, but then he didn't take it because he's busy, you know. Yeah. So that's it. Yeah. Okay, Devidas, I have this nagging doubt, which you will kindly dissipate. Right, so now, because before he was doubtful that it could be dissipated because he didn't know that he had a doubt. Right? Because he thought that he actually knew everything. But now he's saying, you'll kindly dissipate, because he knows, one, the character of the Vaishnavas, that they're kind, but two, is that they're scholars. At least his father and Vaishnav Das, they're scholars. Right? The Vaishnav devotional activities of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Shakyam, and Atmanivedanam appear to be diluted with material activities. Then, could not these be called naimittic karma as well? Right? Because you do these things, but there's results, or you're having to use the material senses, you know, or material situations. So wouldn't these also therefore be naimittic? Meaning, if you're taking naimittic meaning, it's mixed with the modes of nature. Mm-hmm. So wouldn't that be the same? I detect a certain bias in this matter, right? You know, why is it the Vaishnavas are performing these activities with their senses and all that, and they're getting results, but that's devotional service, and the Smartas are doing exactly the same thing, but that's not devotional service. So is this biased or what? You know, so that's his, Devi Das is going, you know, what's going on here? Deity worship, fasting, using material things in worship, all these are part of the mundane nature. So how can they be designated as nitya, eternal, right? Because you're taking material things, they have a deity which is made out of material elements. You know, that's how they're seeing. You're fasting, so you're getting results from that. You're performing that to get a result, you know, like that. You're using material things in the worship, you're getting flowers and this and that. It was just a flower. It was part of the material energy, and now that you picked it, suddenly now it's transcendental. So that's his doubt. So it appears to be exactly the same. So what actually is the difference? Lahiri Mahashaya. Son, it took me a long time to grasp this point. So try to understand it properly. Human beings are of two kinds. Ahika, worldly, and paramartika, spiritual. Worldly men seek only temporal and corporal pleasures, including respect and material advancement. Spiritual persons are of three categories. Ishanugata, those surrendered to the Supreme Lord, Jnananishta, those desiring monistic knowledge, and with a view to emancipation, and Siddhikami, those aspiring for mystic powers. Right? So in other words, the yogis, the jnanis, and then the devotees. Right? So they're all spiritual, right? Because now we're having to make a distinction even in spiritual. The Siddhikami are absorbed in the attempt to enjoy the fruits of karmakanda ritualistic performances. They want to obtain mystic powers and thus display miracles by pressing into service different yaga, offering oblations, yajna, performing sacrifices, and astanga yoga. Right? So they can use any of these to try to get. They take the view that if an Ishwara exists, then he is subservient to the laws of karma. Modern sciences belongs to this group. Right? In other words, the laws of nature are there, so if I follow the laws, God has to mean it. In other words, if God's in control of the laws of nature, but if I follow the laws, the result has to come, because they're laws. So actually, I control God. Right? I don't do anything, of course I don't, but if I do something, then God has to respond. Right? That's the problem. The Jnananishta cultivate empirical monistic philosophy, endeavoring to realize their identity with Brahman. They do not know or hardly care whether an Ishvara exists or not. So that's what we were mentioning before in these other paths of Jnana, is they may know he's there, but they don't really care. Right? It's not a big point. You know, it's just like I'm trying to prepare lunch. Right? There is a prime minister of the country. Right, but do I really care? You know, Not really. It has nothing really directly, seemingly to do with my preparation of lunch. Ultimately, I can prepare lunch because there's not some foreign army, you know, marching through my living room and, you know, taking my whatever I'm cooking for lunch and taking it with them, right? So that's why I can prepare lunch. So that means, so you know, the indirectly there is some connection. But it's kind of like I could acknowledge that. Yes, I acknowledge that, and their superiority, so we have respect. But in reality, I just want to cook lunch, so it's not a big, you understand? So they want to get out of material energy, so God may exist and he may have a part in that, but otherwise him as a person and that is not really an important element, yes. Where did they come from?
The lab.
Oh. Oh, you got one on your there, on your knee.
What's that?
Yeah, well, now he's on your paper.
So I have one. This one is a little shocked. I'm letting him sit for a while.
Yeah. Otherwise, you just take the cloth and go like that, and then he gets
it. Maharaj, do they justify this, or do they just not talk very much about it? The fact that they're disinterested.
Them or the bees?
Yeah, I was thinking them, but we can take the bees afterwards.
Okay.
It seems...
It's because it's just not important. You know what I'm saying? It's just like that. The guy who likes to drive his car on the road is worried about his car. He's not worried about government, you know, it means... you know, the government has to, you know, take taxes and then make arrangements, make contracts, and do all this designing and all that and make the roads. He's not really worried about that. Only if there's a pothole in the road, then he complains that they're not doing their job.
Okay.
But if there's no pothole, as long as the road's there, he drives around in the road.
But if they're endeavoring for liberation, wouldn't they be meeting this God? I mean,
not necessarily, because if he's a person, why do you have to meet him?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like you go to the train station, you don't have to meet the station master. You just have to be in the train station. You just want to be there and get on your train. You know, but it's only going on, the trains are running because the station master's there. So as long as the station master does his job, you get your train and say, hurry ball.
Sounds stupid.
It is, but that's the whole point. That's why the Vaishnavas pointed out it's not actually that well thought out. But these are spiritualists, so they're superior to the materialist. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't mean that they're still not.
No, but like we're studying in the other class, the logic is much more well thought out than what you see from modern scientists.
Yes, but still, it's still not there. Well, it's just like, let's say you have a small 5-year-old, okay? You know, how much... You know, maturity and development in that is there. Not so much, right? And they're mainly focused on what they're into, right? And it's, you know, small and simple, right? Now, let's say you take a teenager, right? Much more developed, more intellect, more skills and abilities, but what are they into?
Different.
Just different things, but centered around
themselves.
So it's basically the same thing, just a little bit more technically developed. So this is the same way as the monists are just technically more developed materialists. Right? That's all. So it's only when you get to the Vaishnav, then it actually becomes real.
Mm.
You know? Yeah.
Why would they be still considered spiritual?
Because they're situated on the spiritual platform. Though temporarily, but still they're on the spiritual platform. Does that make sense? So they're dealing with spirit, but they're not dealing with the complete understanding of spirit. Does that make sense? So it's a temporary understanding. Because unless you deal with the person, then you're not going to be permanently situated on the transcendental platform. You know, so they'll be there for a couple of lifetimes, and then that's it. But the Vaishnavas, they're trying to be there permanently. So that's the difference. Okay. The Jnana Nishtha cultivate empirical monistic philosophy, endeavoring to realize their identity with Brahman. They do not know or hardly care whether an Ishwar exists or not. They just are identifying with God, but they're not actually worried about who God is. Right? Because they're only worried about the transcendent, the spiritual aspect of God. God's Brahman, and I'm Brahman. You know, so hey, you know, something's here. Nonetheless, to suit their particular practice of sadhana, they imagine that an Ishwar exists and practice bhakti towards the imaginary form. Because in their mind, anything with form is imaginary. It's not real. So to help the mind focus, because it's easier to focus on something has form than something without form. So then a branch of this Gyan Nisha, they focus on something. Because even if they don't, right, even if you say, no, we don't believe in any of that. But where are the Buddhists sitting when they meditate? Right? In front of a wall. Right? Not the wall, but in front of a wall. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. It helps.
It's something to focus on. Or they have a candle, or, you know, something is there. So they'll say, no, it's all void. We don't worry about it, but they always use something. There's always some aid that has form. But then their ideas ultimately will give it up. But the point is if it works, why would you want to give it up? Right? Something that works, why would you give it up? Right? I got some new pots. They were really good quality. They cooked nice lunch very nicely. So now I throw the pots out. You know? So the problem is they're not that smart. Gradually, their endeavors are rewarded with appropriate results. And at this point, their imagined Ishwar is no longer useful or imperative. Because right? You got the results, what do you need the medium to get the results for? Because they're not seeing the Lord as a goal, they're seeing Him as a method. Right? Thus, this bhakti to Ishwara, they believe, is transformed at the time of enlightenment into their particular definition of jnana, which is monistic identity with the impersonal Brahman. Right? So eventually, that's their idea, is that all paths lead to the one Brahman, because whatever you imagine, eventually it'll all become Brahman. They'll give it up. They don't understand that Brahman has an identity. This philosophy does not accept Bhagavan or bhakti to Bhagavan as being nitya. So it's temporary. While we see the other one is also temporary. So you're performing the nitya activities, you know, that would be performed by the devotees. And you're calling those your own the nitya activities. But your idea of that worship of the Lord you think as temporary. It's naimittic. So that's where the difference is. Right?
It's only in that day process.
Yes, like that. So, in other words, they're following it as, in other words, the Lord is there as an element of their abhideya, not as the goal of their abhideya. Their goal is mystic, you know, perfection or, a Brahman realization. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, their dealing with the Lord is temporary, so therefore it's naimittic. So their activities are naimittic, though they may do them every day. But ultimately, while the Vaishnavas, that service to the Lord is nitya, when you get the results, you'll still worship the Lord. So therefore it's eternal. Does that make sense? So here, even leaving out the element of having faith in the chit potency and devotional like that, here is just in logic, it's been presented so one can understand the difference between the nitya and naimittic. Right? Does that make sense? So the reason the Vaishnavas is eternal, because you're dealing with the eternal platform of relationship with the Lord. Right? The Ishanugata category of spiritual man comprises of those who are actually surrendered to Ishwara. This group is truly seeking spirituality. Right, the others just want the benefit of spirituality. Right, the ananda of it. They're not actually interested in the spirituality. It's just that the being on the spiritual platform, you'll get a happiness there that you don't get by being not on it, by being on the material platform. So technically, even Brahman, they don't really care about. What they care about is the ananda they'll get from Brahman. So that's why we're saying they're still enjoyers. Right? They believe in eternal, unlimited, and personal Ishwara, who has created both the jivas and the material nature by his potencies. They understand that the jivas are the eternal servants of Ishwara, and that an eternal mood of bhakti in respect to Bhagavan is the nitya dharma of the jiva. They appreciate that the jiva, by his own minute potency alone, is incapable of attaining spiritual realization. Karma cannot offer the jiva any eternal results, and monistic jnan simply warps and distorts the vision of the ultimate truth. However, by the mercy of Sri Krishna, all spiritual perfection for the jiva is ensured when the jiva executes bhakti to him. Right? So, by logic, you can prove that the other two aren't actually spiritual, but it doesn't define actually what spiritual is. Only when you accept the Lord, right, in this devotional, then it actually defines what is the nature of the jiva. Why is there? What is the nature of spirituality? Does that make sense? So by logic, you can tell what something is not. You can't tell what actually is spiritual. You just know something is not this. Mm. So therefore, it must be spiritual. But they don't actually know what is spiritual.
All right, that verse from the chapter of Loki, which defines Maya as being separate from the Lord, that will only be possible by when you include the Lord. Then you have the what is not.
Yes, yes. Because otherwise, it's just all Maya. The varieties of Maya, like that.
If by logic we define that this is not the spiritual, as you mentioned, karma and jnana, and then they're left kind of is nothing, how will they get the bhakti? Where will they get the bhakti from to go?
Means they'll get it from devotees. It's association.
Means so by their own endeavor they can...
You can get up to the spiritual platform. But even then, still the Lord has to be kind that they get the results. Because the Lord still gives the results. But by their own endeavor, basically, you've done the endeavor, the Lord gives the results. That's up to the platform of liberation. Right? But beyond that, that is only by the mercy of the Lord. Because then he's revealing himself. Right? So it's not a matter you did the work, therefore he has to reveal himself. You know, it's not like that. It's that he's pleased, then he'll reveal. Right? Because then you're dealing with a relationship, not just work. I did this, so therefore I get that. You know, that's fair enough.
After liberation, it starts the personal relationship?
Yes, means you're directly dealing with a personal relationship. Before that, you're dealing with a personal relationship. But there may be other considerations. But so, in other words, you can advance yourself through the Madhyam platform by your endeavor. It's the Lord's grace, but it's the result of your endeavor. But beyond that, it's only the mercy of the Lord and the devotees. The Uttama platform, getting to that platform, is only by the Lord's grace. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can be very determined and control the senses and in this way detach yourself from the material world. Of course, it's by the Lord's grace you can do that, but it said that you want that, you get it. But it's not that I want to see the Lord, therefore I get it. No, that's by His grace.
So we have to place ourselves where we think the Lord's grace might be.
No, we place ourselves where the authorities say it's recommended to be. Right? Yeah. That.
Makes more sense.
Okay, the first two categories of spiritualists are thus known as the followers of Karmakanda and Jnanakanda respectively. Only members of the third category can truly be called devotees. The first two categories claim to be true spiritualists, but in reality they are not seeking the highest goal, but are worldly minded and seeking material gain. Thus their religious goals and practices are all ultimately naimittika. Right. So that's the thing. So technically here, if it's being followed properly, even the Karmakandi and the Jnanakandi are worshipping the Lord. Right? So then if you're not doing that, then it drops down into demigods and then drops down into, you know, just keeps dropping down. At least be a nice guy and do that and get your results now. Right? So the bottom is just a, you know, theistic moralist. Right? Below that, it's not even recommended because that's not technically human. But, you know, human starts at theistic moralism. But you're talking about then that Brahminical platform, that's the highest of that. But then within that, it should be that you're applying those to worship the Lord. But if it's not done in with the idea to please the Lord, even though it's spiritual, it's not actually going to give devotion. Right? Mm. So that's where all the activity should be done for the Lord's pleasure. Dear son, the deity worship you conduct at home is not paramartika, because you do not acknowledge that the Sri Murti of Bhagawan is eternal and transcendental. Don't think, okay, here's a temporary manifestation. You know, the shastra is defined, so this is the manifestation of the mode of goodness. Right? So the Supreme Lord is there, he's beyond, so that we can, the closest we can get within the material is the mode of goodness. You know, or even pure goodness. But it's still, the forms and all that aren't real. They're still illusory. Does that make sense? So that's why it's not actual deity worship. But all smartas are worshiping deities. You know what I'm saying? Even the Shankarites, they have deities. You go to their mutts, they have deities. There's worship going on. Right? But the problem is they don't actually think the forms are eternal. So because of that, they're performing naimittic dharma. You understand?
Yeah.
Do they see the forms as the Lord?
They see the forms as representing the Lord, but actually the Lord is something beyond. See, because they don't know the transcendental form of the Lord. So they know material forms, and therefore spiritual, the Brahman platform, you don't have forms. Right? It's just the quality. But even then, they don't even see the qualities. But in other words, spiritual means nothing mundane. So mundane has forms, so therefore spiritual has no forms. But they don't understand that, no, spiritual is the original forms. And the forms you see here are the reflection of that. You know what I'm saying? So you're looking in the mirror, there's forms, and they're giving you problems. So if there's no forms, I won't have any problem. Right? So they'll consider that it's beyond the material, so it's spiritual. But they don't understand is, no, there's the original that's being reflected. So that's the difficulty, yes.
If they're temporary, where does the authority come from?
Because the deity worship is there. That deity worship is there. But you're supposed to see the deity as eternal.
Yes.
You're not supposed to see him as temporary. In other words, whether I see the deity as eternal or temporary, the ritual being recommended in the shastra is the same.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because they'll follow Pancharatra, or they'll follow, you know, some agama of the Veda. And so their ritual is authorized. What's not authorized is they see that the deity is a temporary manifestation. So therefore, their performance is naimittic. It's temporary. Well, if they see it that the Lord is eternal, therefore it's nitya.
What I'm thinking is that if this is how they see it, then technically they could use anything.
Yes, but the point is they're following shastra, so only what shastra recommends is what they use.
But that would mean that shastra is temporary.
That's another thing, but that's the point is it still means it's they understand it's eternal, but it's just a manifestation of the Brahman, so the manifestation of the shastra may be temporary. So therefore even that is naimittic. So that places them on all levels, but still they're pious enough to follow the shastra. Does that make sense?
Even though they don't really know what it is.
Yes. So that's what Lahiri Babu said before, is that I studied all these things, I didn't really understand. Now I understand. And Devidas also, now I'm starting to understand. Right? Vaishnav Das also before. Is I had all this knowledge, but then now I understand what's the actual. You understand? So the difference is in the mentality. You understand? Because that was the confusion before. Is the Brahmins are performing this activity, and the Vaishnavas are performing the same activity. So why is Vaishnavas is called Nitya, and the Brahmins it's naimittic, right? But within their definition, it's called Nitya, right? In other words, the activities they call Nitya, we call Nitya, and the activities they call naimittic, we call naimittic, right? Because they follow Ekadasi only on Ekadasi, so it's naimittic. But daily they're doing their puja, so that's nitya. And we also daily do the puja, and occasionally, at the right time, perform akadasi. Right? So, therefore, it appears that the definitions are the same. So why are we saying their whole concept of nitya and naimittic is all naimittic?
Because they're going for liberation.
Right? Because they think that the forms of devotion that they're using are temporary. Does that make sense? Or even if they're not even seeing with the Lord, as he's performing his yajnas with the ideas next life he'd be elevated to the heavenly planet, he's not going to be doing yajnas, so that's naimittic. Nitya means what you're doing now and you're going to be doing eternally. Right? So service to the Lord, you'll do eternally. The particular medium you're using, that may be temporary. So that's what we say. The conditioned nature is naimittic. But the Lord, but the devotee serving the Lord, that's nitya. Right? So when you come to that platform, then you'll also get nitya facility. The body will be eternal. You're in the eternal spiritual world like this. Right? You interact with the devotees who are eternal. Does that make sense? You come in contact with the Lord.
Right? It depends on desire.
Sorry?
This is depend of our desire.
Yes, it depends on the desire. So you want to develop love for the Lord, then that desire moves in that way. You don't, then it doesn't. Is that a dear son, the deity worship you conduct at home is not paramartika because you do not acknowledge that the Sri Murti of Bhagavan is eternal and transcendental. Thus, you are not an Ishanugata, surrendered to Bhagavan. Devidas, yes. If one worships the Sri Murti but does not accept this form as eternal, such worship is material and not spiritual. Nonetheless, could this mundane ritualistic worship not offer the worshiper clues to the other higher spiritual truths? Right? Okay, so now he's understood the difference. Right? Because it's logical. You're not seeing it as eternal, so why would you get an eternal result? Right? But he's saying, but still, wouldn't that be something to give them an idea or some glimmer? Lahiri Mahashaya. That may be true, but still, worship cannot be designated as nitya dharma. Even though it might give you some indication, but you're not performing it as a nitya dharma, so it's not getting the result as. In Vaishnava Dharma, Vaishnavas worship the Lord Sri Murti as his eternal form. Hence, the worship is Nitya Dharma. You worship the Lord as Nitya, it's Nitya. You worship him as Naimittic, it's Naimittic. Devidas, the Sri Murti forms are sculpted by man from matter. How can one see them as absolute and eternal? Right? So this is where the problem comes in. Right? Because we're dealing with the senses. But it's whether the senses are engaged in the Lord's service or not what makes them spiritual or not. Right? It's, in other words, there's a difference between external energy and material. Right? External energy used for not in connection with the Lord is called material. External energy used in the service of the Lord is called spiritual. Right? So that's what is not being caught. So again, it goes back to, but still, nice logical presentations. Lahiri Mahashaya, the Sri Murti worship of the Vaishnava is not the same as that idea. In other words, what we're doing is not that way of looking at it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is positively not the Nirakar Brahman, the formless Brahman. He is Satchidananda Vigraha, the embodiment of eternality, absolute knowledge, and transcendental bliss. Okay, so that's why we add the Vigraha. Satchidananda Vigraha is the form of that. Endowed with all potencies. The embodiment of form of eternality, absolute knowledge, and transcendental bliss, endowed with all potencies. This is the Sri Murti of Vaishnava worship. At first, the form of Bhagavan appears in the spiritual consciousness of the devotee and is reflected within his mind. The Sri Murti is then constructed according to this vision of the devotee, and through the potency of bhakti, Bhagavan is attracted to manifest the Satchidananda form from within the Sri Murti. Then the pure devotee sees the Sri Murti of Bhagavan, that Sri Murti unites with the transcendental form of Bhagavan that the devotee sees within his heart. Right? Because you see him transcendentally, therefore he's pleased, he manifests within that form so that the form and what you see are the same. The Jnani's concept of Sri Murti worship is not the same as that of the Vaishnavas. The Jnani's believe that the Brahman concept is fused into the material form of the deity by their imagination. Right? So again, you're using the mind. So in other words, it's my imagination that it's Brahman, but actually it's not Brahman. But the point is if you understand this is Krishna, then it is Krishna. Otherwise, this is stone. Right? Because you see him as Krishna, therefore, and it's the authorized form, therefore he manifests. Because it is his potency. So he's saying the spiritual consciousness is reflected in the mind. So then in the Lord comes in that form, then that part becomes is the Lord also. So he's in the mind, in the consciousness, and now what's reflected in the mind is actually the reality. So then there's that, it's all one. Yeah. And the Brahman remains in that material form as long as is needed for worship. Later, the form is to be considered a mere material object. Ponder upon these points deeply and try to understand the differences in these approaches to deity worship. Right? In other words, one is you're thinking that what's within the mind is imaginary, while the other is in a reflection of the reality. Right? And then, because of devotion, becomes reality. Ponder upon... Okay. When one, by the mercy of a genuine guru, receives initiation into the path of Vaishnavism, then the different results of these contrasting forms of deity worship become understandable. In other words, without the chit potency, it won't be understood. You can present logic up to a point that you could logically accept, but to be able to realize that, that's only by the mercy of the devotees, right? In other words, he can get an intellectual understanding, but he won't get realization except by the mercy of the devotees. Devidas, Father, you have removed a major doubt in my mind, and I will contemplate these subjects seriously. I am now convinced that the jnani's mode of the deity worship is ultimately a form of deception and a denial of the eternal form of Sri Bhagavan. Right? Because they're saying it's imagination. So that's the point. It is. Their concept of worship is. All is well for now. I will continue our discussion later and pray at your feet for more answers. Devidas Vidyaratna and Shambhu returned to their lodging and came back to Lahiri Mahashride later in the evening. No further discussions were possible at that time because everyone was simply engrossed in the joy of singing and chanting Harinam. The next day in the afternoon, Devidas and Shambhu came and joined the other Vaishnavas assembled in the courtyard of Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji. Devidas and Shambhu sat close to Lahiri Mahashai. Just then, the Qazi, a head of the Muslim religion and the magistrate of Brahmana Pushkarini village. You know Brahmana Pushkarini? Okay, if you kind of slangify this a bit. Brahmana Pukur. Pushkarini means a lake. Bengali is Pukur. So it's supposed to be Brahman Pushkarini, means it's the Pushkar made by the Brahman, but it's become Brahman Pukur. Okay. Standing up courteously, the Vaishnavas welcomed the Qazi heartily. So in other words, this is after his meeting with Lord Chaitanya, right? Because now Lord Chaitanya is already gone and that, so... In turn, the Qazi exchanged warm greetings with the Vaishnavas and joined them. Everyone sat together, expectantly waiting to hear Paramahamsa Das Babaji speak. Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji addressed the Qazi. You are truly fortunate, being a descendant of Sri Chand Qazi, who is personally favored by our Lord, Sriman Mahaprabhu. So please be merciful upon us. The Qazi replied, by Sri Chaitanya's mercy, we are also the recipients of the Vaishnava's mercy. Sri Gauranga is the Lord of our hearts. We begin everything by first offering our humble obeisances to him. The discussion continued for some time, the Qazi finally taking leave of the Vaishnavas, offering them his respects. The evening concluded with congregational chanting, Harinam. It says part one, it doesn't say. So then we have somewhere here a part two, yes. Yes, we have time. So part two. Right now, there's now it's that five chapters of the.
Yeah.
This is four. This is chapter six. So that was chapter five.
Yeah. We did that in like.
Mm-hmm. That was chapter five.
Yeah.
Huh. It says here chapter four.
That's the title.
Huh?
Yeah, that's the title. The
chapter says chapter five. Then
yeah.
Four.
Okay, but this was five.
Yes.
Because I was wondering, but he said there are groups of five. Yes.
I just have a question. I'm just trying to distinguish here between where you were, what was the whole discussion about people who are like smarter Brahmanas do the rituals to kind of get to, like, it seems like a Brahman realization.
Right.
So are they Mayavadis?
Means they are, but it's not necessarily a professed philosophy. You know, it's not necessarily that they're followers of Shankara, but they're, you could say they're impersonalists, but they're not actually the impersonalists that understand Brahman as a feature of the Lord. So they are thinking everything here is temporary. See, there's a difference between whether you understand this column is real, it's Brahman, and it's there, or you think it's not actually, everything's Brahman, so there's not actually a column there. Right? The Mayavadis will say the column's illusion. It doesn't exist. An actual Brahmavadi says the column exists, it's just Brahman. You know, but we'll say it's a column, it's this, it's nice, it's all that, but actually it's Brahman that makes it powerful or looking nice or anything. So it's actually Brahman. So they just see Brahman. Sorry?
Yeah.
So that's the difference between the Brahmavadi and the Mayavadi. So the Mayavadi, it's all illusion. So the smartas and that, though their focus is generally on karmakanda, they're using the rituals of karmakanda, and they can either use it to enjoy heavenly pleasures or to liberate themselves, you know, and come to the spiritual platform of Brahman realization. You could use it either way. The point is, you use the activity you want, it will get a result. So if you want the result, it'll be fruitive. If you perform the activity without desiring the result, you'll get freed from the entanglement in the result. Does that make sense?
To your degree.
If I want money for myself by engaging in the proper activity that will generate money, right, I'll get money. Right? But I'll get entangled because I get attached to having more money. Right? Does that make sense? Now, if I perform the activity because I'm a business person, I'm supposed to make money. This is my dharma. But I'm not interested in the result for myself. I'm doing it because I'm supposed to do it. Right? Then the result is gained, but because you did it without desire for the result, you get freed from that desire. So you get freed from the desire for money.
And that's the problem.
That will bring you eventually to the liberated platform. The more you apply this in everything, then the more that happens. It means it's just the position of Brahman, the liberated platform, let's say. So the point is that the smartas are performing the recommended rituals of worship of the Lord, but they're not doing it with the idea that the Lord is eternal, and the ritual is eternal, and the devotee is eternal, and they're going to have this eternal relationship. So they see it as temporary, so they only get temporary results. Right?
I kind of feel that there's so much of that in my own heart, which is like, just, it's like a temporary kind of thing, and I have that position, and that it's like, I'm just trying to get some result.
No, that's okay. Means in that we'll begin from that platform because we're used to interacting with material energy to get results that make us happy, right? So then we're taking up devotional service with the idea I'll become happy, right? Because, you know, artarti is that, you know, jigyasu, there's a problem of wanting to become happy, right? And not necessarily being successful. Right, so then we're taking that up, but by association, we see that the pure devotional element is the more important. That there's something beyond the happiness by removing the material problem, you know, by worship of the Lord, or by even just being liberated from the material platform, right? That there's actually the happiness of interacting with God. So then we become interested in pure devotion, right? But then even there, we may be performing worship of the Lord because it makes me happy, which is, you know, also, again, as a preliminary stage. But eventually one sees this, that my happiness actually comes when the Lord's happy. Right? Because if I try to endeavor separately from my own happiness, it's not, you don't really get it. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, there's so much more. If you go into the kitchen, make something for yourself, sit down and eat it, it's nice. Right? The sense is such a sense of, but if you go into the kitchen, prepare something nice, or invite over friends, see that they're happy, it's so much greater. Right? So one slowly learns that there's more and more. So as long as one has the understanding that developing this pure devotion, pure love for Krishna is the ultimate goal, then these other temporary goals may be there for some time. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
You said that by the mercy of devotees and mercy of Guru, one can get a potency of chief to realize that the Achyavigraha is the eternal form of the Lord. Does it mean that one gets this mercy once and has this constant realization? Or a person should always be eager to get this mercy, to always see the Achyavigraha like an eternal form of the Lord?
Means as long as you're thinking that there's a possibility it's not, then one should always be endeavoring for that mercy. Means, in other words, one only has to understand that, get that mercy one time, and then it matures. But if one's always thinking that one has to get that, then one should endeavor to get it. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise one's thinking there is a possibility it's not. You understand? But if you understand this is Krishna, then it's a matter of then continuing receiving the blessings of the Lord and the Vaishnavas, that you deepen your understanding and devotion to the Lord. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just the first step that this is the Lord. But once that's there, okay, now he's the Lord, now what? Now we render service. Does that make sense?
It was said before that the Lord manifests in the form of the Achyavigraha as long as one is born in the service. And when it is not needed, it is going away.
Who is saying? Means you're talking about what we were reading here. Yeah, because the smartest, they have the deity, they call the deity in, do the worship, and then send the deity away.
My question is, why Prabhupada told that we don't have to put the forms of Radha Krishna as a statue in the house if we don't worship them?
I'm not sure I get the question.
Srila Prabhupada don't put the murtis of Radha and Krishna in your house as your statues if you don't worship them. So why did he call this?
What means just like this. What would you think? The guy has a wife, but he only interacts with the wife when he feels like it. So that when he doesn't feel like it, he keeps her in the closet. So is that okay? Because, I mean, think about it. When he does open the door to a closet, he wants to put in the time and energy, you know, and the effort, right? He's going to take her out to dinner or go buy her something, or at least notice that she exists. Right? Good, no? Yeah? Huh? Oh, I see. Yeah, but then how do you work out, how does he get out of the closet to
mobile.
Let the wife out of the closet? Oh, mobile. Oh, okay. Okay, that could work. So in other words, you just have two the house divided into two, so it's completely separate, independent units, but there's a door in the middle. So, okay, so when you feel, then you open the door. Does that make sense? In other words, why would you keep deities of Radha and Krishna if you're not going to worship them? Because the point is you can have pictures of Radha and Krishna, and they're perfectly fine to sit there as pictures. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the point, is that they form, because the picture is a deity also. But somehow or another, many devotees have the idea, unless it's an archa, then it's not a deity. But the pictures are also deities. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the whole, how you say, the whole Orthodox religion, it's all about pictures. They don't have deities. You know what I'm saying? Catholicism, they have deities, though they say they're not deities. You know? Does that make sense? So the idea of pictures and worshiping pictures is not a strange idea, that no, it has to be, you know, the archa form of the deity. No, the picture form is quite nice, because then when you worship, nice, and when you don't, then, you know, it works like that. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
So if I don't have second initiation and I have picture and want to offer incense?
Yeah, that's fine. Point is, this picture is fine, because it's not that it requires initiation. Archas do, like that. Because that's the process. You know what I'm saying? If it's the temple deity is picture, then you have to be first initiated. But if it's at your house, it doesn't matter. So you set up nice picture altar however you like, and you know, offer your artiques and offer both, everything, so that's fine. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, Jiva Dharma part 2. Summary of chapter 6, Nitya Dharma, birth and caste differences. Okay, so now we've dealt with the overall concept of whether, you know, the Samartas are Vaishnavas or not, because they're performing the same activities. Right? So now he's getting down into the detail of the birth and Varnashram. Right? So now those kind of details. Because you may catch the one because they're philosophical, but what about, you know? You know, so it's always. Devidas Vidyaratna had firmly believed for a long time that the Brahmins were the foremost of the Varnas, and that unless a Jiva takes birth in a Brahmin family, he cannot attain mukti. Right? So he's got one side, yes, the Brahmins are the foremost of the Varnas, but it's not that by taking birth in there, that's the only qualification. Right? Therefore, when Devidas heard the discussion between the Vaishnavas and the descendant of Chankazi, he became completely dissatisfied. Right? He thought, a Hindu has to take a bath upon even touching a Yavana. Generally, it's even by seeing, but, you know, you'd have to walk around in a, you know, a thing, a bathtub of water all day. So, why then did Vaishnav Das Babaji and Paramaham Supreme Das Babaji affectionately invite the Kazi to join their assembly and sit amidst them? That very night, Devidas said, Shambhu, I cannot remain silent on this matter. I shall ignite a blazing fire of logical debate and burn this heretical view to ashes. Right. He's kind of, it means the emotions have gotten to him. He's kind of forgotten that, you know, his father is better at this than him, and Vaishnav Das is way better. You know? In any case, any Vaishnav could deal with it. But a few days later, Paramaham Supreme Das Babaji, Vaishnav Das Babaji, Pandit Anantadas from Nishingapali, Lahiri Mahashai, and Yadava Das of Kulia were seated in a large kutir to one side of the Madhava Malati Bower, quietly relishing the nectar of chanting Harinam. The afternoon remained overcast with low-hanging clouds continuing to shroud the sun. At that time, the famous pandit Krishna Chudamani arrived, accompanied by Devidas Vidyaratna, Chaturbhuj Padaratna of Samudragar, Chintamani Narayan from Kashi, so it means from Varanasi, and Kalidas Vachaspati from Purvastali. Purvastali is where the means the when you go to means the Ganga goes up now, and it kind of goes straight through Nidaya. But it wasn't doing that for a long time. It would go out, come down, and go way out, you know, like three days journey on the Ganga. There was Purvastali, like that. So move this side, because Purvastali was famous for all their dacoits. So, by Krishna's grace, if you move down this way, then it's not so easy to get here. The Vaishnavas heartily welcomed this small group of Brahmin and Pandits, requesting them to take seats. Paramahamsa Supreme Das Babaji, being the senior most Vaishnav, said, "Most people complain that an overcast day like today is bothersome. However, for us, because today Brahmin Pandits from the Holy Dham have graciously come to sanctify our humble dwellings with the dust of their feet, it is an auspicious day." Right? Because if a day is always overcast, it's considered inauspicious. The normal thing is that the sky is clear, then the rain clouds come in, it rains, then the clouds go away, the sun comes out again. So if it's always overcast, that's considered inauspicious.
Denmark right? is very inauspicious.
Much of the northern hemisphere is very inauspicious. Yeah. And in Denmark, you don't even want to talk about Seattle.
Oh, that's true. That's what it is.
Like that. You know, there, if the sun comes out, you know, it's like,
what's
that? run. The Vaishnavas are naturally very humble, even more so than a blade of grass. Therefore, they offer their respects by uttering, "Vipra Charanebhyo Namaha." I offer my obeisances at the feet of the Brahmanas. Because the Brahmanas are very dear to Krishna. So they see it like that, just like the cows are very dear to Krishna. So then what would be the problem? The Brahmin Pandits, who consider themselves to be respectable scholars, responded by offering blessings to the Vaishnavas and sat down. Right? Because they're in the Brahmin position, and the others are, you know, not acting in that way, so then naturally it appears socially then they would be giving the blessings. But technically, the Vaishnavas are the superior form of Brahmins. But these Brahmins, because they're just scholars, don't actually understand that. The Brahmanas offered pranam to Lahiri Maharshi because he was senior to all of them, because they knew he was a Brahmin, so they don't know, you know, the others. In turn, Lahiri Maharshi, being conversant with the scriptural conclusions, immediately reciprocated their offering of respect. Right? So whatever is appropriate. In other words, when someone offers respect, you must reciprocate. So whatever is appropriate, either offering obeisances or giving blessings or something, there must be a reciprocation. You can't have someone offer you respect and you not reciprocate. Does that make sense? So we see in some occasions it specifically mentioned that they offered obeisances to each other. But in this case, the pandits and that, he's a senior in that community, so he would accordingly, what was appropriate for them, he just would return that. Because otherwise, if he offered obeisances, they might not understand. Right? Like that. Because in their community, they wouldn't necessarily do like that. Because they're smart, not Vaishnavas. Amongst the Pandits, Krishna Chudamani was very expert in argument. He had a record of defeating many Pandits in Kashi, Mithila, and many other places. He initiated the debate in the assembly saying, right, because in other words, Vaishnav Das, you said he'd start a blazing fire of logical debate. He didn't say he's going to do it. You know, so he knew that these others were there, so he collected them and told them what had happened. So then naturally they would want to come and establish what's proper. He initiated the debate in the assembly, saying, "We have come today to have darshan of Vaishnavas. Although we do not support all your conduct, we very much admire your exclusive devotion." Right? So you have to admit that. So they have the devotion to their deities, but it doesn't have that exclusive devotion, because their devotion to the deities, they have other things they do, they have their household duties, they have, you know, all the different things that they do. So it's not exclusive. So they can appreciate that exclusive devotion, But the conduct, they say, that they don't appreciate. Right? Or say all of the conduct. Because much of the conduct is exactly the same as theirs. Right? Because Vaishnavas being Brahmins, then the conduct will be the same. But there's certain aspects that the Vaishnavas don't get involved in, or they take on a more natural and more humble position that the Brahmins wouldn't necessarily do. So at that point, then that's where there's a difference. Right? So in other words, we can see they're intelligent, they can discriminate. Not that one thing's wrong, everything's wrong. No, what's wrong is wrong, but what's right is right. Right? The Supreme Lord has said in the Bhagavad Gita 9:30, even if one commits the most abominable action, if he's engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. Right? So, in other words, he's done something wrong, but he's situated in devotional service. So everything will become fine. Everything will work out. Right? It's not like the smarta, he does something wrong, but he's not situated like that in devotion. So actually it will drop him from his position. But for the devotee, it doesn't. Right? Because he's situated in the devotional service. That's the actual nitya. So by deviating, that means what? That's a naimittic activity. So the naimittic can't overwhelm the nitya. Does that make sense? This quotation from the Bhagavad Gita is our evidence. On the strength of this verse, we have come to meet sadhus. But we have one complaint. Why do you associate with Muslims on the pretext of bhakti? I request the best debater among you to come forward. Right. Well, they're very clear about it. So this is our evidence. This is what we're going to discuss. This is what we're going to use as our basis. We have this point that we feel is not correct. So now whoever is, you know, good, come forward. You know, because he's very, renowned, so he naturally wants somebody renowned to come forward. So depending on what it is here, then they'll do like that. But sometimes within the Shastras, then they have fun. The Lord has fun by, you know, like coming as a little boy or something. And then completely defeating these kind of people. Or Shiva does that also sometimes. They just come as, the guy's so proud, it's not worth it going in the whole attitude. They just come as a kid, so he's not paying attention. And then the kid says this stuff, it's just like, what? You know, it completely throws him off and defeats him right there, so then they just pack up and leave. You know, so much easier, right? The Vaishnava became a little saddened upon hearing Krishna Chudamani's reproach. Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji replying, "We are fools. What do we know about debating? We simply act in accordance with the behavior shown by the previous Mahajans." Right? So we just do what they do. So what do we know about all this? "You are all scholars, so you may recite the instructions of the Shastras. We will listen in silence." Right? Because the point is then it's going to be a debate, the whole thing. No, let them keep speaking until it's very obvious the point, what's wrong. And then at that time, you can very humbly, you know, just present the point. But otherwise, then, you know, it's this whole posturing. You have to come out and, so, what is the thing? No, but then, you know, it's like that. No, you let them explain it. Because then, you know, because the material element, they will make a mistake. So at that point, then you can... Because the other aspect would be, why waste your time arguing for so long when much of the things are common anyway? So it's where the mistake is, then you just discuss that. So by them explaining it once, it's much quicker than you saying something, they saying something, going on and on and on. Right? So it's also a very, even in the way of debate, it's a better way. But then you have to take the humble position. Right? If you tend to identify oneself as scholarly, one would not necessarily appreciate this approach. Chudamani replied, "How can you act according to such a statement? You are under the auspices of the Hindu society, and if you perpetuate practices and teachings that are opposed to the Shastra, the world will come to ruin." In other words, you're Vaishnavs, you're functioning under the Hindu, you know, umbrella. So why are you doing things that will, you know, cause problems to this whole Hindu scene? We will practice and preach against Shastra and at the same time claim that we are on the path of the Mahajanas. Right? So now he's saying, we're just doing what the Mahajanas done. So now he's attacking that. No, but you're saying you're doing what the Mahajanas, but how would something that's against Shastra be what the Mahajanas have done? Right? So therefore it's only sentiment. What kind of talk is this? Who is a Mahajana? One can be truly known as a Mahajana only if his behavior and teachings are in accordance with Shastra. Right? So that we'd say is correct, but they're thinking that what they're doing is not in line with Shastra. So you wait until they, you know, get to that point. How can there be any benefit in the world if we simply label anyone we like as a Mahajana? And then quote the saying, Mahajana yena gatasa panta. Right? So he's saying, so they know everything, right? Because like before, Devidas, whatever Lahiri Babu or Vaishnav Das would say, they already know those quotes. They're famous quotes, right? They already know those scriptures. So they know all these points, but just they don't have realization. That, okay, so we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaura Flame.